Well, we're an hour down. We're an hour to go here on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you. Sort of a debut night for me here at 96.5. It's my first day on the job after a couple of years, or I should say three or four, down in the Springfield, Missouri area. But I am a Kansas City kid, born and raised, excited to be back in the area, excited to be bringing Chiefs and Royals and so much other content to you guys here tonight. JT Noah is my producer for tonight's show. I'll be with you guys tomorrow on After Hours as well here on 96.5 The Fan. And that one's going to be a ton of fun. Taking a look here, I'm still trying to figure out how everything works around here. It's day one. There's going to be quirks. There's going to be some slip ups along the way. I was trying to figure out how the talk back and all these different things work. And apparently I may have asked about an adapter for a cord on air, which is fine. And, you know, taking a look at the phone line, we did have somebody mention it. They said, yeah, you need 1.55 millimeters. That's what I was asking about. That's kind of the correct one. Somebody said, yep, mic's on. Ha ha. In all seriousness, great show so far, brother. Thank you. I appreciate it. Excited to be here. Taking a look at a 913 number here, says Joe Brady. That's the name. I knew his last name, couldn't remember first name for the life of me. Making a prediction saying Joe Brady will be the next head coach for the Cincinnati Bengals, and he'll be reunited with Joe Burrow. I have to say that one, I mean, I could see it happening, but I also would be kind of shocked if the Bengals did just decide to let Zach Taylor go. I don't know. I mean, they're in the process right now because they fired their defensive coordinator. They're looking for some other opportunities along those lines. So if he's already in the process of looking for his DC, if you haven't already fired him, you didn't make the postseason. So what's the wait? I mean, go ahead and make that move now. So, I mean, I'm not saying that it's impossible that it will happen, but I just don't know. I think Zach Taylor will be around in Cincinnati for another year, although they haven't made the playoffs in back-to-back seasons. Also, I have a message from a 913, says, my wife is a Bearcat. I partied a lot there. Good for you. I can honestly say I did as well. Maybe too much at times. It does happen, but we enjoy ourselves. It's a good time. I loved my time in Maryville, Missouri, just as I'm sure you enjoyed yourself in Warrensburg, Missouri, or as it's otherwise called.
The Dirty Bird.
Yes, sir. That's the one.
Hey, did you guys have Breakfast of Champions up there?
Breakfast of Champions.
Yeah.
I'm going to need more context.
So every homecoming, we would have what's called Breakfast of Champions. My senior year, I decided I'm going to get involved in Breakfast of Champions. You pay $35. Well, at the time when I was there, $35. Got a shirt, and you could drink all you wanted from 6 to 10 a.m. on game day. I'm like, you know what? Let's go have fun. Well, for context, I am a lightweight because I've had stomach surgery freshman year of college. But I said, I'm going to do it. And I had a great time. Well, my professor, he texts me. He goes, hey, could you call the game today? We had a dropout. I said, in my drunk phase, I go, yeah, let's do it. And so I call the homecoming game a little tipsy. And we are on top of the press box. And I go, in the second quarter, I go, wow, it's really hot. It's really hot and high up here. And about 3 months later, I get an envelope package. And in the envelope, it goes, best college announcing in the state of Missouri, and it was the homecoming game. And
that's awesome.
And my professor never knew about this until I talked about it on the air a couple months ago, and he texts me. He goes, are you serious? I go, yeah. He goes, I can't even be mad. You won an award, but come on.
Yeah, been there. Maybe not entirely there. I was hungover. I wasn't drunk or on the verge of drunk at one point. I was.
You were like, I had it last night.
Yes, I was coming off of it. It was not fun. It was Northwest was playing in a game against Nebraska Kearney. It was an early Saturday morning travel day, I guess you could call it. And Friday night, my best friend in the world, he's going to love that I'm telling this story. I was trying to write a paper, and I was doing game prep, right? I was the sideline reporter for the Northwest football team, and I was doing my game prep, finishing it up. I was about 4 or 5 pages into my notes, probably way too much. That's way too many notes for a sideline reporter, but I was 21, 22-year-old kid who just wanted to make sure I had everything ready to go, you know? And he keeps texting me. He's badgering me to go out. So I go out, and the whiskey went down smooth. smoother than it should have, and I drank way too much. I went to bed. I woke up at 4:30 in the morning so that we could go. We left at 5 a.m. from Maryville to drive all the way to Kearney, Nebraska for a 2 o'clock kickoff, and I did not feel good. Did not feel good on the drive to the meeting spot to get in the van to drive us up there. Did not feel good for the first hour and a half of the car ride. I fell asleep. And as I said earlier, I'm an Iowa fan. My dad's an Iowa fan. That's where I got it from. You know, don't blame me, blame him. But I have a strong, strong disdain for the University of Nebraska and anybody who calls themselves a Cornhusker fan. A lot of that stems from the fact that a lot of my family is from Nebraska and are big Cornhusker fans themselves. On my mom's side, dad's side is all Iowa fans. So there's a little bit of a rivalry there. But I fall asleep in the car. I wake up from this little, you know, car side nap, very much hungover. And I look to my right, and what do I see? Memorial Stadium, Lincoln, Nebraska. And I'm like, eh, that fits. So we finally get to Kearney, Nebraska, which is sort of in the middle of nowhere, right? As is Maryville to some extent, a 7-hour drive or whatever. We lose. Rare loss for the Northwest Missouri State Bearcat football team when I was a college student. And that was just sort of the cherry on top. You know, I got to drive through Lincoln. I got to see Nebraska's football stadium. I'm hungover and we lose. And I was up at 5 o'clock in the morning. Just not a solid day for me. It was a tough one.
Yeah, my girlfriend gives me crap for that day because she had complained that I don't go out enough for her. And that weekend, she actually went home. And then I texted her, I go, hey, I bought tickets for Breakfast of Champions. And she goes, you are literally drinking the day I'm gone, and I've been wanting to go out with you all this time. I was like, yeah, guess what? I can do it on my own, too. She goes, I hate you.
Yeah, fair point. Like, nowadays, you know, my wife, she likes to go out occasionally and do that sort of thing. I'm very much an old man. I'm a homebody. I don't like to go anywhere.
Yeah, that's just me. That's me. And my girlfriend hates it.
Yeah, I just want to come home and hang out. I want to go to work. You know, if you want to go out and get food, that's great. But I don't want to go into a bar or a club and do those sorts of things. It's just not for me. 515 in the messaging stream says, go Iowa State clones. Ouch. Don't like it. Never again. You can go ahead and give us a call. Give us a text. 913-586-7965. We'll be checking those throughout the course of the show. Really do appreciate you guys being a part of it tonight. My debut here at 96.5 The Fan as a kid who grew up in Kansas City or just outside Kansas City. Maybe not KC proper, but I grew up in the metro. And when I try to tell people where I'm from, I'm like Lawson, Missouri. They're like, where is that? I said, exactly. I'm from Kansas City. It's easier to explain it that way for people. It's like, I got to describe where this town of 2,500 people is where I grew up. So I just tell people, yeah, where are you from? Where'd you grow up? Kansas City. And then occasionally you'll get somebody that you'll be like, oh, Lawson, yeah, I know where that is. And they'll tell me about my high school basketball coach or my assistant principal. They know who they are. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that's yes, you know that person and I know that person. So, yes, you are familiar with the hometown, the tiny little podunk community that I'm from that I absolutely love with all my heart.
I mean, I live in a bigger town, and I still say Kansas City. I'm like, I doubt you know where Raymore is, so I'm going to go Kansas City on that. So.
Raymore. So did you go to Ray Peck High School?
I did go to Ray Peck.
Okay, very good.
My brother was on the team that made it to the first time ever Final Four in the Class 6 for football, and then he graduated, and then they won a ring. And I go, see, you just had to leave so they could win a ring.
So what year would that have been that your brother graduated?
He graduated 2020, so COVID year. And then I graduated 2019, and then they won it in 2021. First time ever winning it in Class 6. They won back-to-back in Class 5 when Chase Kaufman was there, if you remember Chase. Big
yes.
Chase, yeah.
Yes, very much so.
That's the only reason people remember Ray Peck, really, is because, oh, Chase Kaufman, yep, that was him, yeah.
Mizzou guy, still in the record books quite a bit when it comes to just total yards and receptions and touchdowns, not even among tight ends in Mizzou history, where they're an extensive list of guys. But, yeah, I was just curious that 2021, that was my first year working, or maybe not my first year, but it was my first year working down in Springfield, and I had an opportunity to call a state quarterfinal game between Ray Peck and Nixa down in Southwest Missouri, and had a chance to saw Ray Peck play, and that was one of the first games I got to call in terms of a playoff setting. But yeah, very, very solid football team. They had a wide receiver.
Jaden Doss went to Nebraska.
Yeah, and then he might still be there, or maybe just graduated. They had a really, really solid running back.
Yep, you talking about DeZevin Walker?
Yes, DeZevin. That's literally the name that was in my head, but I was not going to throw that out in case I was dead wrong.
He's just now becoming a junior.
Okay, yeah, he was
and I'm still, because they've gone down real bad. Ray Peck football did. Mm-hmm. They won one game last year, and it was the first round of the playoffs, so they didn't even win a regular season game. Mm-hmm. And I saw a bunch of times that he got an offer to go to IMG, so I was surprised he was staying with Ray Peck when he. Sometimes you're like, all right, I'm going to take the better offer here and leave the little town of KC.
I'm gonna hit the deuces button and go ahead and go along my merry way. But appreciate you guys in the text line again, 913-586-7965. If you want to send us a message or ask a question here, we got about 45 minutes left in our show today and a lot to get to. Let's talk about Travis Kelce. A couple of bigger stories coming out about him today. I feel like most of our Chiefs talk has been a little bit negative. Coordinators leaving, assistant general manager leaving. We did talk about the positives of the DeAndre Hopkins trade and how it's going to be a fifth round pick and not a fourth round pick. And with the Titans securing the number one overall pick in the draft, that third rounder that the Chiefs got from Tennessee in the L'Jarius Sneed trade, basically that's a second round pick. I mean, the 65th overall selection seemingly in that area. I mean, that's massive for a Chiefs team that's trying to replenish and could see some guys walk out the door in the next season or two. Trey Smith and Nick Bolton potentially. And, you know, what do you do with Karloftis and McDuffie? There's names out there. There's guys that you're going to have serious and uncomfortable discussions with. But Travis Kelce in the news for a couple of different reasons today. I'll start with the more positive one, and then we'll kind of go through the other side of this, so to speak, because he's getting a little vocal out there on maybe not social media, but in the press. Let's just put it that way. But of course, Travis Kelce is the Chiefs nominee for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award this year. It's the second time he's been nominated for it in his career. The other was back in 2020. And along with this Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, Nationwide, of course, the insurance giant, put together a challenge. They called it the Nationwide Charity Challenge, where fans voted in and whichever player among the 32 finalists for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award, whichever one got the most votes, the Nationwide would be donating X amount of dollars, tens of thousands, to the charity of that person's, you know, that nominee's organization. Well, who wins it? Travis Kelce has won it for the second time, right? This is an award that has been going on for 10 years, and he's now won it twice. He won it back in 2020. So he will get a very, very substantial donation to the 87 and Running Foundation, which is absolutely outstanding. I'm hopeful that, you know, Trav can have a real legitimate shot at the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award this year. His organization is doing so much for this area and others. You know, Cleveland Heights, the area where he was born and raised, he does a ton in that area, too, to help the community. Just such a great humanitarian in a lot of respects, along with being, in my opinion, the GOAT at the tight end position. But, you know, that's a debate for another time. I'm sure there are those out there that believe it's Tony Gonzalez. Those that believe it's Rob Gronkowski, we have an argument, but that's fine. That's the one side of it. And it's crazy to think, you look at this Nationwide Charity Challenge, and this shows you the scope of Chiefs Kingdom, folks.
And Swifties,
I guess that's a fair point. But I'm talking about just Chiefs Kingdom in general right now. You want to know what kind of influence you have as a fan base and how good a fan base Chiefs Kingdom is? I said this award has been a factor for 10 years. 10 times this award has been handed out. Would you like to know how many times a Kansas City Chiefs player has won that honor? Five. Five of these 10 times this award has been given out, it's gone to a Chiefs player. Kelce won it twice. Tyrann Mathieu won it once. Eric Berry won it once. And Patrick Mahomes won it once. Five times in 10 years is pretty unbelievable if you're the Kansas City Chiefs. So a big congratulations to Travis Kelce, but also a huge congratulations to those who voted and those who consider themselves a part of the Chiefs Kingdom. You are absolutely showing up and showing out for your Chiefs faithful. We do have to hit a break here, so I'll wait until the other side to talk to you about maybe the other side of why Travis Kelce is in the news today. And, you know, it's a bit of an interesting one. You know, a lot of controversy. I'll give you one hint. It involves the Cincinnati Bengals. Surprise.
And Walmart, right?
Something. I'm not quite sure. But it surrounds the Kansas City Chiefs and the Cincinnati Bengals and them whining about the Chiefs doing something or not doing something because that's all that Cincinnati can do is complain about the Chiefs. They can't actually beat them. So we'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to After Hours with Logan Weber here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. Oh, Travis Kelce. The guy knows how to keep himself in the news cycle at all times, which is a great, great thing. But he's in the news cycle for a couple of reasons. I mentioned earlier the Nationwide Charity Challenge, part of the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award honors. He won that by a fan vote, one of 32 nominees. He got the most votes, which is, again, a big shout out to the Chiefs Kingdom and the fan base for showing their support for one of the all-time greats in Chiefs history and the all-time greatest tight end, in my opinion. I know I'm just a young, dumb, brash kid at times, but I am of the opinion that Travis Kelce is the best tight end to ever play in the National Football League. He is in the news for another reason. And I want to get into this one a little bit. Logan Weber here with you. JT Noah producing here on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Travis Kelce today, you know, did the Kansas City Chiefs lose on purpose, right? There's a lot of people out that are believing that the Chiefs against the Broncos in order to ensure that the Cincinnati Bengals did not make the postseason. And earlier this week in the New Heights podcast that Travis does, of course, with his brother Jason, Jason brought it up. You know, is there any truth to that? What do you think about it? And Travis says, and I'm going to use very strategic silences throughout the course of this quote. He says, quote, "I ain't scared of nobody," Travis Kelce said. "I wanted them in the playoffs. I want to slay every dragon one by one like Mortal Kombat. I don't even want this to be like we play the lowest seed. Just give me the best teams. AFC, NFC, give me all of them. Mortal Kombat style," he said. Quote, "I'll go through every one of them. Just give them my best effort. I ain't scared of a single soul, man." You can fill in those blanks with whatever word you want, but it is an expletive. I think that's fairly safe to say. But you know, the controversy continues after Cam Taylor Britt goes to social media and starts talking about Kelce said, "I'll play them at the Walmart parking lot," right? Talking about the Chiefs, he says he doesn't give a, you know, again, fill that blank in with what you will. Cam Taylor Britt, however, he's defensive back for the Cincinnati Bengals, said on Instagram, he put it in his story, he said cap in all capital letters, cap in capitals, and he said, "Shut that up." He did misspell that word, the expletive. He put S-H-I. There's a letter missing there, I have to say. So
I think that's a new slang.
I think it definitely is, but you know.
And I still don't think the slang can we say on the radio. It's kind of sad. So it's not even a good nod. It's not a good slang.
No, absolutely not going to do it. I'm not going to entice the FCC. No, never going to happen. But you know, you think whatever you want, Cam. I don't know. Maybe it's the University of Nebraska education that you got there. Yes, that was a Cornhuskers dig. I worked it in there. Boom. But I don't think there's any truth to it whatsoever. What were the Chiefs supposed to do? It made sense for them to rest their starters. What incentive did they have to play anybody of consequence in that game? What was the incentive to throw Mahomes out there or Joe Tooney or Creed Humphrey or Trey Smith? What was the incentive for Hopkins and Worthy and Hollywood Brown to play 60 snaps? What was the incentive to have Chris Jones and George Karloftis out there every single down defensively? None. Were they going to lose the game? Yes. I mean, the Broncos are a great football team. They have an elite defense, which I'll get to a little bit later on here in our show. But to say that they just didn't want to play the Cincinnati Bengals, so they intentionally threw the game, is an asinine thought process for anybody to have.
Maybe beat the Patriots.
I mean, yeah. Just maybe. Maybe don't start 3-8. I think that's a solution to your problem, Cincinnati.
Yeah,
maybe have a defense that doesn't look like a shred of a slice of string cheese. I don't know. Maybe don't have gaps the size of the Grand Canyon along your defensive front. maybe that's the answer to your question.
Or you forget that September actually matters. I mean, like, the list goes on and on. Like, oh, hey, well, forget about September and then play catch up the whole year. Guess what? It didn't work this year.
Yeah. Yeah. You should have beat the Patriots week one. Oh, you know what you could have done? You could have beat the Chiefs in Arrowhead week two, right? That could have helped you make your playoffs. That could have played a factor.
Logan, wait, that wasn't DPI though. So that's what they say.
Uh huh.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Sure it is. Yeah, maybe you don't lose to the Ravens twice. Maybe you don't lose on the road against the Chargers. Maybe you don't lose to the Steelers. I don't know. I think starting 1-0-3 and then 3-8, that's the reason you didn't make the postseason, Cincinnati. All right, let's not put blame on anybody else. You're going to blame a team that took care of business and won 15 games heading into week 18 and had an opportunity to rest their starters? Goodness. Move on, Cincinnati. Stop blaming the Chiefs for all your problems. Your problems are right there in house, starting with your defense. You figure that out first.
I don't see anyone complaining about the Bills only playing Josh Allen for one whole play. Like, what?
Yeah, just make sure he keeps the starting streak intact.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, it's a little bit gimmicky, but I have to say I applaud the effort. Taking a look at the text line, 913 says, why are we talking Bengals? They lost, move on. Agreed, we're not talking about them anymore. Cincinnati can complain all they want. 913 also, a different 913 says, no doubt the Swifties had a role in the Walter Payton Award. Oh, no question. I mean, come on, look at the ratings. Love the Swifties. Move on. I will say, admittedly, I'm not a gigantic fan of her music, but hey, nobody, easy, easy. I applaud Taylor Swift. I think that her ability as a lyricist, I don't think there's anybody close in music right now, at least in her you know, lane, so to speak. I think Kendrick Lamar is as talented a writer when it comes to the hip-hop genre as anybody in existence. Hozier's another really good one. If you're not familiar, H-O-Z-I-E-R, Hozier, look him up. He is phenomenal. Irish singer who is just incredible. Had another person in the text message line say, 1985, the first time the Royals won the World Series, I was 10. My oldest son was 10 when the Royals won their 2015 World Series. Love your reference to your first Royals win. You will do great here. Hey, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, 1985, my mom was 7. And my grandmother, who worked, she was an ER nurse at a hospital here in the Kansas City area. My grandma and my mom slept in a tent outside of Kauffman Stadium every night for about a week. And my grandma and my mom at 7 years old, went to every single home game in that 85 World Series at Kauffman. So, I mean, my love of Kansas City sports certainly comes from my mom. As I said, my dad was born and raised in Iowa and then moved to Lawson, where I'm from, my hometown, in junior high. So my dad's love is for college athletics, not necessarily professional sports. So I would say my pro sports definitely comes more from my mom and my grandma. And then my love of collegiate athletics in the University of Iowa definitely stems a whole hell of a lot more towards my dad's side of things. I give my dad a lot of credit for that, but I also give him a great deal of blame because the University of Iowa breaks my heart.
It does. It does a lot.
So incredibly often.
Hey, at least they wear the same colors as Mizzou. Hey.
Yeah. Hey. Yeah. If you would have played a drinking game during the Music City Bowl about how many times they referenced that both teams wore black and yellow, you would have blacked out by the end of the first quarter.
Yeah, it was bad.
It would not have gone well for you.
I don't even know if they knew anything else about the two teams besides the other player. Luther Burden and your running back route. Besides that, they were like, black and yellow, guys. Yeah, they're the same guy. Colors.
Yeah, both teams were in the same. It's hard to tell them apart. It's hard to tell which, you know, it's hard to tell who that fan is rooting for because everybody's in black or yellow or gray or white. Yeah, yep. We get it.
Wow, thanks.
Both
Captain
teams,
Obvious.
Yeah, both teams wear the same colors. Let's take a look at further down your game prep and try to find some other hidden storylines in there. I'm not quite sure.
Also, talking about the stadiums, you were talking about the spiral. You know, that made me think, man, that would be such fun to go down on a sled this week.
Oh, man.
Monday and Tuesday. Holy crap. That would be so fun.
I'd be concerned about your speed and trajectory once you got off of the spiral.
Yeah, that's true.
Because, I mean, it leads right towards that gate, those gates that exit outside of Arrowhead.
Put some padding there. You got to put some padding.
Yeah, something's got to go up. Otherwise, you are running headlong into metal fence, and I'm not... This is After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. When we come back, we are going to be talking some Kansas City Royals. We had some interesting moves that were made by the Chiefs, of course, the Royals. Of course, you had the re-signing of Michael Lorenzen, one that I think is a pretty strong value move by the Royals. But they also picked up a guy off waivers from an AL Central division rival and signed a minor leaguer who has a very familiar name to many who are familiar with the annals of baseball history. And we're going to be talking about that with Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star. That's coming up right after this. You're listening to After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. A lot of Kansas City Chiefs talk during the course of our show here tonight. After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber making his debut on the air. God, I talked about myself in a third person. That sounded and felt gross. I didn't like any part of that. Yes, I am Logan Weber here on 96.5 The Fan, and we talked a lot of Chiefs, but there's also been quite a bit of Royals news. I know it's the off season, winter meetings have come and gone, but that doesn't mean that there's not moves to be made and signings to be had, and we're going to talk about a few of them here over the course of the next 10-15 minutes or so with Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star. Jalen, how you doing, my man? It's been a while.
Logan, I'm doing great. Congratulations on your show. This is awesome.
Hey, man, I appreciate it. I'm excited to be back in Kansas City. I know I had you on several times down in the Springfield market talking some Royals, and that was much to the chagrin of a lot of Cardinals fans down there in that area. I don't have to worry about them anymore. This is Royals country we're living in now, baby.
That's right.
No doubt about it. So I want to dive right into this and look at a couple of different things. I'll start with the news last night and into this morning. Michael Lorenzen back in Kansas City on that one-year, $7 million deal. What do you make of him coming back to this Royals team, and where do you see him slotting into this rotation? Is he going to be the four, or is he going to be the five, and the Royals will look to find somebody to fill that slot behind presumably Michael Wacha in the rotation?
This is exactly what the Royals kind of wanted to get. They wanted someone from the beginning of the offseason. J.J. Piccolo, the Royals general manager, said he wants someone that can be a swing pitcher that can provide innings as a starter or as a reliever. And with Michael Lorenzen, you have to think that he's going to get one of the earliest opportunities to be a part of that starting rotation that is going to miss Brady Singer because you traded him to the Cincinnati Reds for Jonathan India. So when you look at what Lorenzen brings to the table, we saw it last year. I believe he had a 1.57 ERA or something like that when he came over to the Royals and from the Texas Rangers. You look at his production and what he can be, he is someone that knows how to pitch. He leans into his own repertoire, and he just loves to compete. So I think he definitely will probably get one of the first opportunities to really nail down one of those two roles as the four or the five. And you can't forget as well that the Royals also have a lot of young pitching depth as well. You have Chris Bubis that is going to transition back to being a starter after pitching as a reliever coming off of Tommy John surgery last year. You have Kyle Wright that is potentially going to come back from Tommy John surgery this year. You have Daniel Lynch IV, and they're really high on Noah Cameron, a young prospect that they protected from the Rule 5 draft that they put on the 40-man roster. So you also can't forget about Alex Marsh. He's a pitcher of experience. So they have so many different options that they can put in that number four and that number five spot. And I think adding Michael Lorenzen gives them more flexibility to really fill out those two roles.
That was the name. You mentioned Chris Bubich, one that I wanted to ask you about. You mentioned that he could potentially slot in as that number four or number five starter in the rotation. What do you make of that as a possibility? Or are you of the opinion that he's somebody who could stay in the bullpen? Because he was phenomenally effective coming out of the pen last year after he came back off that Tommy John with a 2.67 ERA in just over 30 innings.
Yeah, Chris Bubich, the Royals view him as a starter. That's what they want him to be, and they're going to give him every opportunity that he can to kind of reclaim that starting rotation spot. If you go back before the Tommy John surgery, when he was pitching in 2023, he in the early part of that season, he pitched well. I think there was a start he had against the San Francisco Giants where he really was strong, and you started to see the signs of a guy that really showed himself as he can handle pitching every 5 days and be effective. I mean, and then what he did down the stretch coming back from Tommy John in 2024 and being in the bullpen, taking just what he was asked to do and making every opportunity of it. I think that with his pitching repertoire and what he can bring to the table, he is someone that the Royals are going to lean on. That's a left-handed arm that is going to be able to really fill in. You see how the Royals are balanced in that starting rotation with the likes of a Cole Reagans, a Seth Lugo, a Michael Wacha, and now you're going to have a Michael Lorenzen back, and if Chris Bubich can get either that 4 or 5 spot, that puts you on a really strong starting rotation that you could go into the season with.
A strong rotation to kind of rival that bullpen that really came on late in the year and were a big part of how the Royals were able to hold on to that postseason berth and kind of make some moves there, getting to the divisional round. But there were also a couple of maybe more under-the-radar moves that the Royals have made either today or earlier this week. One of them is a fairly big name, one that I think many will be familiar with in Major League Baseball circles, Kevon Biggio. Of course, the son of Craig Biggio, Major League Baseball Hall of Famer, who's enshrined in Cooperstown, he signed a minor league deal with this Royals team. Now, he has kind of bounced around. I shouldn't say kind of. He has bounced around quite a bit. He's now on his 5th Major League Baseball team in the last year and a half. You know, he hasn't been all that great in major league appearances. Last year, he hit 225, he hit 225 in his career. He hit 197 last year in pretty limited experience. What do you make of this move for the Royals? He's more of a utility guy, kind of fits the Michael Massey mold in a lot of respects. Do you think he ends up with the big league club, or is he just a minor leaguer and a just-in-case guy down there in AA or AAA?
I think he's going to get every opportunity to make the Royals out of spring training. If you look at what Royals general manager J.J. Piccolo and his staff has done since he's been the GM, he has really dove in well with these minor league additions where it's low risk and it can be high reward. You look at someone like Sam Long last year, he signed a minor league deal, and no one relatively knew who Sam Long was in early February and March in spring training. He was working on the backfields, but you just saw, like, he has something that could contribute to the Royals if he got with Brian Sweeney and Zach Bovin, the pitching staff. And that bore fruit with you seeing him being a key part of the bullpen this past season. So with Kevon Biggio, you can potentially see him working with a guy like Alex Dunwall, with Joe Dillon, with the rest of the hitting staff, Keone Delrini. And if he can get back to where he was when he first came into the league with the Toronto Blue Jays, where he finished 5th in American League Rookie of the Year voting, and be that guy that can be a left-handed super utility to play all over the field, that just adds to the versatility that the Royals want to play for. Remember, the Royals value speed, they value defense, and they value good starting pitching. And if you can be able to have two of those three categories filled on your resume, that gives you a good chance to potentially make a big impact with the team.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's pretty notable that he has played right field at the minor league level and at the major league level, right? Kind of fits a little bit of what the Royals are trying to take a look at, because the middle infield doesn't seem to be where he will play a ton. You got Bobby Witt at short, and you just traded for Jonathan India to seemingly be that second baseman for your club. If he does make the big league roster, do you see it being a lot of right field for Biggio in that utility role?
I think it'll be more or less kind of the same role that Adam Frazier played last year. The big key thing for Biggio is he's a left-handed bat that can play in the infield. So there's someone that can play third base, someone that can play a little bit of second base, and also play right field. You look at what Adam Frazier did last year. He drew a handful of starts, and it was either, like I said, in right field. It was at third base on occasion. He bounced around where the Royals needed him. But just having that left-handed bat in the lineup, the Royals last year, they wanted to have 5 left-handed bats in the lineup. That's kind of what they kind of wanted to stick with and utilize when need to be, when they deploy their left-handed lineup. And I think that having someone like Biggio, if he can make the team and he gets his offense straightened out, that could be a key thing to have to continue just the balance for that the Matt Quatrero and his whole staff like to do.
And kind of along the same lines as Kevon Biggio, the Royals announcing earlier today, and another sort of under the radar kind of acquisition, picking up Braden Shoemake from the Chicago White Sox, a former first round pick who was a part of that Nicky Lopez deal with the Braves last season. He gets put on waivers. The Royals pick him up today. He's a Texas A&M guy who was a first round pick back in 2019-2020. What do you make of this move? What do you know about Shoemake, and is he another guy like Biggio who is going to get the opportunity to make the big league club this year?
Yeah, coming from where I'm from in Atlanta, I knew about Braden Shoemake when he came up through the Braves system, and he's someone that, you know, he profiles as a really toolsy type of player that most teams value. And for him to be a first-round pick, he hasn't really put together at the MLB level yet, but he's still so young, and he's still can be able to work on some things. This could be one of those signings where you allow him to grow and develop. Maybe it's in AAA for a bit before he comes up to the major league level. But when you're at this part of the off season, you want to improve on the margins. You want to have quality depth, because you never know what could happen during the course of the season. And if you have guys that can play at a high level and have some MLB experience, that's all the more important, because no matter how well you do at the big league level, one injury could have you reaching down to the minor leagues to get someone up to fill the void.
And, you know, taking a look, we mentioned that Biggio has some experience playing right field, but I think that, again, when you look at this Royals team, that's maybe the biggest position that folks look at and say this is where they need the most amount of help. So, in, you know, conversations that you've had, things that you've heard, are the Royals at all interested? Are they still looking? Are they going to try to make another signing or two before we reach the season? Or are they pretty satisfied with what they've got and they're going to roll into spring training with this crew?
I think they're still going to try to look to get a middle-of-the-order bat to help the lineup, whether that be maybe another outfielder, someone that can, you know, fill in. But the key for the Royals this year, there is looking more and more likely that they're going to lean on having a bounce-back season from Hunter Renfroe, who, you know, he didn't hit the 20 home run threshold like he's normally done in his career last season. But if he's back and fully healthy and he work some things out with his swing, so the Royals can believe they can have someone that can get back to his true form of what the back of the baseball card says. And then MJ Melendez, you have to look at what MJ has done. The Royals still believe in him, and he has all the tools to be a breakout candidate. He just hasn't really put it together consistently at the MLB level. But if you've seen him, maybe they should tell him that he's playing the Boston Red Sox every single game, because he seems to perform well whenever he plays Boston. But it's in there, and the Royals just like to see that come and get together more consistently. If they can get consistent MJ Melendez and a bounce back for Hunter Renfroe, then you can kind of alleviate some of those concerns about the middle of the order. And also, Michael Garcia, he also has the tools, but can he put it together as well? Those three players are going to be key, I believe, for what the Royals want to do and go further, because if they can get either of those three in a position where they are playing consistently and back to, you know, on their normal output or even exceeding that as a breakout candidate, then the Royals will be in a good spot.
Man, I got to say, it's exciting to be talking about the Kansas City Royals and their postseason outlook in January. I mean, we haven't gotten a lot of these in my some 26 years of life as a Royals fan. It's an exciting time, and Jalen, appreciate you taking the time to join us tonight, my man. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Logan. I hope to be back on again, and like I said, congratulations on your show. I will be listening for sure.
All righty. That sounds great. Yeah, we're looking forward to have you on many, many times here in the future. That is Jalen Thompson. He is the Kansas City Royals beat writer for the Kansas City Star. Been in that role for a couple of years and looking forward, I'm sure, to what the Royals have in store for 2025. We got one more segment coming up here. Want to talk to you guys a little bit about what we may see college football playoff-wise. We do have a game tomorrow in the CFP that I can't wait to get to, and it's going to take place during the course of our show tomorrow night. So may have to give some live updates. I'm not quite sure what we'll do with that, but I want to discuss it here a little bit in the final few minutes that we have here. This is After Hours with Logan Weber here on 96.5 The Fan. JT, it's my first day, but man, you're tugging at my heartstrings today. That's two Ben Rector songs.
Well, I would have never played the second one if you didn't tell me at the beginning of the show that you like Ben Rector so much.
Oh, dude, unbelievable. Yeah, I saw him in concert. I actually am trying to convince my wife to see him in concert again. He's playing at the Midland in March of this year, and I saw him in concert at the T-Mobile Center. He was performing with Dan and Shay, and so he was sort of one of the opening acts along with Haley Witters, I believe was her name. She was really good as well, and Dan and Shay was unbelievable. But I went specifically to watch Ben Rector in concert. The other two is like, yeah, they're great. That's not why I'm here. I'm here to watch Ben Rector. And so this opportunity to see him at the Midland is going to be fun. Like I said, my wife and I, our first dance song at our wedding was Love Like This by Ben Rector. And I absolutely adore him as an artist. He is so unbelievably good. After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber here with you, making my inaugural debut here on the airwaves here in Kansas City. A Kansas City kid who have spent the last 4 years down in the Springfield market, got an opportunity to come home and talk Chiefs and Royals to the folks who, like me, grew up or have grown up rooting for these clubs. An absolute honor. To be here. But we've got a few minutes left, and while we won't get a chance to preview it tomorrow, because when our show kicks off tomorrow night, so will the game. College football playoff semifinal between Notre Dame and Penn State, and then you've got the Cotton Bowl on Friday between Ohio State and Texas. And what I find fascinating about these four teams and these two matchups is we live in an era of football, whether it's at the college level or the NFL level, where it's all about points, putting up points. Throwing the ball, running the ball, whatever it takes, offense, 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 offense. Everybody's heard the cliche over and over and over again. Offense wins games, defense wins championships. And I think that these four teams represent that cliche to an absolute T. Taking a look at these four teams, Notre Dame at Penn State tomorrow night in the Orange Bowl. Notre Dame is the number two ranked defense in college football this year. Penn State, number seven. In the Cotton Bowl, Friday night, between Ohio State and Texas, Ohio State has the number one defense in college football in terms of points per game allowed, allowing just over 12 a game. That's how unbelievably consistent they've been. Texas has the number four defense in the country. So all four of these teams are in the top seven in college football in terms of total defense and points per game allowed. Meanwhile, the number one defense among these four teams remaining is Texas, who's the number 17 offense in college football. Offense wins games, defense wins championships. And this Notre Dame-Penn State game tomorrow night especially, I think, is truly, truly fascinating. Notre Dame's offense has gotten so much better as the year has progressed. Riley Leonard has really hit the ground running. Marcus Freeman's got these guys playing their best football of the year when it matters the most. But if you're Notre Dame, I think the key to this game, you have got to trust and rely on Riley Leonard to do his thing at the quarterback position, because he has been so good for the last month and a half, 2 months, really since they lost that early season game to Northern Illinois. They've been a much different football team. I think that was kind of the wake-up call that they needed, but he's got to be decisive with his decision-making. This Penn State defense, their defense coordinator and head coach James Franklin, very, very reliant on turnovers to generate points. Drew Aller is one of the best young quarterbacks in college football, and I think he could provide quite a bit to this team. They can't get quite as gimmicky as they may have been earlier in the year, right? They do have that sort of gadget quarterback in Bo Prabula, who has entered the transfer portal and is going to Mizzou. Another loss that my Iowa Hawkeyes suffered at the hands of the Missouri Tigers, as Iowa and Mizzou were his final two in the transfer portal, and he ultimately went with Coach Drinkwitz and the Tigers. But I think that's a game that has a lot of juice to it. It may not be as exciting, as high scoring an offensive affair as you were hoping for, but both of these teams rely on their quarterbacks to make good decisions. Both of these quarterbacks have running ability. It's just going to be a matter of decision making. I think more specifically with Riley Leonard, if he's able to prevent turnovers, I think he is going to have a ton of success against Penn State. Maybe not a ton, but enough success. This feels like the kind of game where it's like first 1-20 might end up winning this football game.
Here's a crazy stat for you. Riley Leonard has gone for 47 first downs by himself for Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Okay, all season. 21 of those have come on third and fourth down by himself. So his legs are going to be more key than his arm, I think, in this game.
I couldn't agree with you more, especially the way that he's run it in the last few weeks, and the way that they've played through their first two games has been really, really remarkable. That's going to do it. Hey, we got through it, right? Day
one.
We did it. Day one here in Kansas City. Excited to be back. Logan Weber here with you. Hopefully I get to be here for a very, very long time. But in the meantime, we'll be back tomorrow night here on After Hours. Yours truly hosting here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.